With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Greetings, and you are listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I am your host, Tracy Savage. Let's have some tunes to start tonight off.
Don't lie to yourself, it gave you pleasure.
Well, hello there, and starting this week's science news off with human news, prehistoric people who took sea voyages to an island 42 kilometers from California's coast laid down offshore roots by eating some. Between 11,500 and 3,000 years ago, residents of San Miguel Island ate carbohydrate-rich corms, not corn, corms, energy storage bulbs attached to certain plant roots. Soil samples from a cave occupied by early islanders contain corm fragments, report ethnoarchaeologist Sita Reddy of Statistical Research Incorporated in Woodland, California, and archaeologist John Erlinson of the University of Oregon in Eugene in an upcoming Journal of Archaeological Science. Corms and seafood provided a nutritious diet far from the mainland, the team proposes. And rock, paper, copycat? Well, rock smashes scissors, scissors cuts paper, and imitation trumps self-interest. People ape opponents' gestures in the rock-paper-scissors game more often than expected by chance, at least if the opponent moves first by a fraction of a second, says psychologist Richard Cook of University College London and his colleagues. Imitation is a lousy game strategy since it's always producing draws, but the brain has evolved to prompt involuntary mimicking of social partners' actions, the Royal Scientist proposed online July 20th in the Proceedings of the Royal Society B. The imitation effect was strongest for the scissors gesture. Okay, so there's a strategy for you. Which the researchers note is very different from the starting first fist position. So I guess if you start off with scissors, you're going to win? Is that what they're saying? I'm going to have to read this and get my game on. Dangers less scary together. Emotional security may hinge on nonverbal cues that someone else has our backs. Volunteers walking a cliffside path in a 3D virtual world concentrated better and reported less anxiety when accompanied by avatars of their real-life romantic partners that clapped, waved, and looked toward them versus digitized partners that looked away, says psychologist Heidi Kane of the University of California, Los Angeles, and her colleagues. Participants stayed farther away from inactive than attentive virtual partners after cliff walks, the researchers reported in an upcoming Journal of Experimental Social Psychology. Others' emotional presence matters more than their physical presence, they concluded. And here's something interesting. Chimp brains don't shrink. Study indicates brain withering may be uniquely human. Unlike humans, chimpanzees' brains don't shrink as they get older. That means that so far people seem to be the only lucky species whose brains wither with age, researchers reported online July 25th in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Chimp aging seems to be on a different trajectory than humans, says aging and Alzheimer's expert Caleb Finch at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, who, by the way, was not involved with this study. But so far, the small number of great ape brains that have been studied show mild changes with age, Finch says, but nothing approaches the damage seen in the brains of people with Alzheimer's disease. Understanding differences in aging between humans and other primates may help scientists figure out just why human brains are susceptible to age-related dementias. Now, in the new study, anthropologist Chet Sherwood of George Washington University in Washington, D.C., and colleagues focused on chimpanzees, which have some of the most developed brains and longest lifespans among primates. The researchers wondered if chimps experience brain decline in old age similar to that seen in humans. The researchers scanned the brains of 99 chimpanzees with ages representing the entire adult lifespan from 10 to 51 years. For comparison, the team imaged the brains of 87 humans from 22 to 88 years old. The human scans confirmed what other studies had found. All brain regions measured showed the shrinkage with age, but the chimp brains didn't get smaller with age. Sherwood points out that the results don't answer a fundamental question for human evolution. Why would we be built in such a faulty way that leads to this degeneration of our brains, he asks. Perhaps a long lifespan is worth the drawback? Who knows? Big brains and long lifespans may free up older members of the population to look after the youngsters, he speculates. And more news about brains. A little creepy, but it's news nonetheless. A wave of death may not be the last gasp. The brain may still be living a minute after decapitation. Almost a minute after a rat's head is severed from its body, an eerie shudder of activity ripples through the animal's brain. Some researchers think this post-decapitation wave marks the border between life and death. But the phenomenon can be explained by electrical changes that, in some cases, are reversible, researchers reported online July 13th on PLOS-1. Whether a similar kind of brain wave happens in humans, and if so, whether it's totally tied to death, could have important implications. An unambiguous marker could help doctors better decide when to diagnose brain death, knowledge that could give clarity to loved ones and boost earlier organ donation, which is part of the key of this study here. In a PLOS-1 paper published in January, neuroscientist Anton Konen and colleagues at the Radboud University in Mechelen in the Netherlands described this wave of electrical activity in the rat brain occurring 50 seconds after decapitation. The team, which was exploring whether decapitation is a humane way to sacrifice lab animals, wrote that this brain activity seemed to be the ultimate border between life and death. They dubbed the phenomena the wave of death. But neurologist Michael van Putten of the University of Twente in the Netherlands was not convinced. "We have no doubt the observation is real," he says, "but the interpretation is completely speculative." And more on this as this study winds up, and more controversy, of course, is going to come out with it, and we'll bring that to you. I have requested a couple of these studies so I can read them myself, so I'm going to get in depth with this in the next episode of Savage Science Radio. And did you know that dogs drink like cats? Yeah, that might be a little disturbing for the dog versus cat controversy. Cats rule and dogs drool. Well, the physics of lapping crosses species boundary. There's videos on this. There may be some outraged sofa clawing and houseplant destruction over this, but a complex system of lapping liquids described over the last year for cats turns out to be the way dogs drink, too. High-speed video using x-rays now shows that dogs get liquids into their mouths by relying on the way liquid adheres to their tongues and the inertia of liquid columns, says evolutionary biologist A.W. Crompton of Harvard University. Dogs plunge their tongues into liquid and, like cats, swiftly pull up a little column of it through adhesion. Before gravity overcomes the column's inertia and the liquid splashes down into the bowl again, dogs snatch a sip. Crompton and Catherine Malinsky of Harvard also reported in an upcoming biology letters, and you can see that video if you go on the Harvard video called, if you just look up Visible Drink on Vimeo, and that is free, so you don't even have to get a subscription to see it. And speaking of cats, we have a very special presentation this week for you. Now, a couple shows ago, I had mentioned that we were going to have a presentation that had Vincent Price. Actually, it was last week, and it was for the Fall of the House of Usher with Vincent Price narrating, but he wasn't narrating in that particular episode. I ended up having to play the original version because it was much too long. But we do have Vincent this week on The Price of Fear, which was a very popular old-time radio show. Now, The Price of Fear was a horror mystery radio serial produced by BBC Radio during the 1970s. The host and star of the show, of course, was Vincent Price. This show stands out in Price's radio career as some of the episodes were based on fictional adventures of Vincent Price himself playing himself, while others had him merely introducing the macabre tale of the week. So that is something cool. And this particular episode is called Cat's Cradle. No, it's not from the Vonnegut story. This is from The Squaw by Bram Stoker. Yes, that Bram Stoker, the Dracula Bram Stoker. So you know it's going to be a little, you know, spine tingly. So we've been talking about cats, we've been talking about heads, and we've been talking about decapitation. And let's roll this all into one Little Story with Vincent Price. When a kitten's head is accidentally crushed by a brash film producer, its mother takes on some medieval revenge. So don't mess with Mother Nature. Well, from the BBC collection of The Price of Fear from 1973, here we have for you Cat's Cradle, starring Vincent Price.
The Price of Fear, brought to you by Vincent Price.
Hello there. Do you own a cat? Or rather, I should say, does a cat own you? Doesn't it strike you as strange that despite centuries of domestication, cats have never really lost their independence, their ruthlessness? To cats, life is still the lore of the jungle. Just try taking liberties with your cat, be he never so tame, and you'll soon be put in your place. I've always had a healthy respect for cats, despite that one time when I was forced to... Oh, but let me tell you about it. I think I'll call the story Cat's Cradle. Several years ago, I was making a movie in Germany, and there was some sort of hold-up during shooting, a tiresome and boring state of affairs that happens all too often. And I found myself with some days on my hands, so I decided to visit some of the beautiful old castles of Bavaria. High on my itinerary was Sonderberg in Franconia, near the Württemberg border. Sonderberg tends to get overlooked by the main tourist trade. Yet it is one of the most complete examples I know of a medieval market town which has survived comparatively intact. I checked in at one of the local hotels late one afternoon, and while they were getting my room ready, I sat down at one of the little tables near the door and ordered a drink, a large tankard of their local beer, actually. At the next table sat a young couple, whispering intently, but their voices were angry and out of control, and as I sat enjoying my beer, it was impossible not to overhear that they were deep in some childish tiff.
Beth, for God's sake, stop talking nonsense.
How dare you say it's nonsense?
It is nonsense, and you know it. I never even looked at the damn woman.
I don't know how you can be so callous. Did you see how disgustingly fat she was?
I tell you, I didn't notice her at all.
Liar.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, God, what a start to married life.
Oh, look, Beth, you're tired. I'm tired. It's all been a strain. Let's not say things we'll be sorry for. Let's have an early night.
The next best thing to your German Hausfrau. Oh,
for the last time, I didn't fancy her. If you're going to carry on like this every time I look at another woman, you'd better tear my ruddy eyes out.
Ah, so now you admit you looked at her.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
The young man glanced uneasily in my direction, obviously wondering if I'd become an involuntary eavesdropper. Of course I had. And I certainly had no intention of making myself scarce. Isn't this a charming town?
Yes, charming.
Delightful.
Are you on vacation?
No. Yes.
That is, we...
We're on our honeymoon.
Oh, are you? Are you indeed? Well, what an ideal place to spend it.
We haven't exactly succumbed to its charms yet.
We've only just arrived.
Well, give it time. Sonderberg is a step back into the past. It takes a while before its charm begins to work.
It's certainly quiet enough.
I was here once years ago, and I always promised myself a return visit. Then it seemed like an oasis in a desert of insanity.
Yes, I suppose so.
Except, of course, that Sonderberg has had its own fair share of horrors, you know. Oh, that's good. Oh, what delightful beer this is. So refreshing.
Do go on, please.
Well, the castle, do you see it up on that rock?
Yes.
Look through the window there, see?
Oh, yes.
Well, that was taken over as a headquarters for the Inquisition. Oh, the poor wretches who were incarcerated and tortured up there.
I saw the castle as we drove in. It was beautiful, but it made me shudder.
It's not surprising. The Inquisition left several pleasant little mementos, all in as good a state of preservation as Sonderberg itself. You must visit the place while you're here. Well, that is, if you're not squeamish.
Squeamish?
Look, I've got an idea. Why don't we join up and go round the castle together tomorrow?
Well...
Please do. Oh, unless, that is, you're already busy.
Well, no, but...
We'd love it, wouldn't we, Beth?
Yes. Yes, of course we would.
At first, I couldn't understand the young man's enthusiasm. I mean, after all, a honeymoon is a honeymoon. Then it struck me that he needed a defense mechanism, and I would be there to guard him from the kind of row that I'd stumbled upon just now. Well, at any rate, we agreed to meet in the hotel lobby at 10 o'clock in the morning. As events turned out, I needn't have worried about breaking the idyllic atmosphere, because as we were about to set off...
Good God, it can't be. Price, it's you. It really is.
Hello, Malcolm.
Now, what are you doing in this neck of the woods? Don't tell me they forced you out of the rat race at last.
Malcolm Rivers was one of the world's prize boars. If the first prize in a competition were a part in one of Malcolm's movies, the second prize would have been a part in two of Malcolm's movies.
Scouting locations, old son. You see that castle up there? That's just right for a new horror picture we've got. I'd love you to read it. It's a great script.
Malcolm, I'm on vacation. Can't we discuss this later, or better still see my agent, huh?
Oh, yeah, but look, just let me tell you...
At this point, our taxi arrived. It was as battered as its driver, but we had all agreed to leave our own transport behind. Trouble was, when Malcolm heard the driver announce that he had come for the castle party, he insisted on coming with us.
Castle? Well, you don't mean to say you're actually going there?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's great. I can actually show you where it all takes place while I'm telling you about it.
Malcolm, I...
No, come on, don't be so coy. You're worse than a virgin on a wedding night.
I just couldn't shake him off. You never could with Malcolm. That's how he'd hustled his way to the top. Now he attached himself to us like an incubus.
The film's all about the Sonderbergs. You know, the family. A sort of pageant of atrocity. I want to step back and look objectively at what each one did. Take Elisa, for instance.
While I can't speak for the others, I was doing my best not to listen. The castle, for those who don't know it, is built on an immensely steep rock dominating the town. And on its northern side is surrounded by a moat, which has long since been filled in. At the foot of the wall is a very pleasant garden with little sheltered seats. Sitting there is a good way of recovering from the rather overpowering tour round the castle. The girl was right. There still was a sinister aura clinging to the place, which even a hot and cheerful summer's morning couldn't entirely dissipate.
And they broke in and found the girl strung up by the wrists over the hot coals. Incredible story. Of course, we can't actually put all that into the picture, but we can imply a hell of a lot. You've got to admit, it's a damn good commercial plotline. Now, that's why it's so important to get the feel of the place where it happened. We want to get right away from the studio look. Well, they can go out and shoot a police picture in real locations, or why not a horror picture? Now, the seventh count was a real character. This you've got to hear. They say...
Mr. Rivers... Do you mind if we change the subject?
Huh?
My wife is feeling a bit faint.
That's too bad, Mrs. And we haven't even seen the torture tower yet. Now, sir, would your lady wife like to wait for us out here? She could sit down there in the garden.
Oh, no, I don't want to miss anything. I'm quite all right. I think it was probably just that steep hill and the heat.
You go on, Malcolm. We'll catch up with you later.
No, I wouldn't dream of it. Stick together through thick and thin. That's my motto. I know. Look at that.
Ah, isn't it sweet? It can't be more than 6 weeks old.
It was a tiny black kitten, which was playing with its mother near one of the seats in the garden just below us. The cat, a great sleek creature whose coat shone in the sun, lay stretched on the grass, and the kitten romped around nearer. The mother would wave her tail for the kitten to try to clutch with its paw, or raise her feet to push the little one away as an encouragement to further efforts. It was a charming sight.
Beth has been on to me to buy her a cat as soon as we were married. Now I'll get no peace.
Oh, Jack, I'd like to take them both. I wonder who they belong to.
Oh, they're not strays, and that's for sure. Look at the condition of the mother's coat. Well, they probably belong to the castle.
It'd be great for the picture. Add a touch of atmosphere. Here, Puss.
Oh, come on, Puss. Malcolm, leave them alone. They can't get up the wall anyway. It's far too steep.
Yes, you're right. Oh, look at the size of the mother. We don't grow cats like that in England. No, wait just a minute. Here we are.
What are you doing?
Well, I'll just throw this stone to attract their attention.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. You might hit the kitten.
Oh, not a chance. What do you take me for? I may produce movies, but I'm not all that bad. I'll just aim it so it lands near them. Make them look up. You ever seen the expression on a cat's face when it's startled? Well, watch.
Oh, God, old man,
look what you've done.
I never meant to do that.
Maybe the wall wasn't as sheer as it looked. Maybe there was a concealed angle at its base which we couldn't see. Whatever the reason, Malcolm's aim wasn't as true as he thought. I truly believe that he only intended to startle those cats. But when he leaned over the wall and threw the stone, it landed with a sickening thud right on the kitten's head and shattered out its little brains there and then.
Oh, poor thing.
The mother cast a swift upward glance, and I saw her eyes flash like green fire as she stared for an instant at Malcolm Rivers. Then her attention was given to the kitten. After one quiver, it lay still, while a thin red trickle oozed from a gaping wound.
Oh, the poor thing.
Well, I wouldn't have had this happen for the world. I can't understand it.
Beth, darling.
The cat was assiduously licking the kitten's wound, and then suddenly she stopped. She must have realized that it was dead and that her ministrations were useless. For all at once, she appeared to lose all interest in the pathetic little body. Instead, she looked again at Rivers, and in that look was all the concentration of primitive hate. Her green eyes blazed, and the blood which dabbled her mouth and whiskers made her look for all the world like an avenging fury.
There, Malcolm, I hope you're satisfied. That's something for your horror film. And you have the consolation of knowing it's real blood. And not vegetable dye.
Oh, don't rub it in. I feel bad enough as it is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Of course you do.
I love cats. I really do.
Although my outburst was a relief, I felt slightly ashamed. I realized how painfully vulnerable the man really was. I turned my attention to the cat. She was now attempting to claw her way up the wall. When this failed, she tried to launch herself into the air, eyes blazing, claws distended, and then she fell back.
Let's go on. I can't bear any more.
Do you want to go home? We can come back tomorrow.
I think a brandy would do you good. I think a brandy would do us all good.
No, I don't want to go back to the hotel. I want to see the castle. Let's go on.
In face of her obvious determination, there was nothing else we could do. At least the tour would divert her mind, or so we hoped. And we also hoped that Malcolm would be deterred from prattling on about his inane script. But no.
I really expect to pick up some great vibrations in the torture tower. It's just over there. You can't expect to involve your audience unless you involve yourself. Now that's the basic rule. You've got to be convinced. And that's why so many movies are just laughable. Nobody is convinced, least of all the makers. I remember one crazy scene. This will kill you. There was this cat.
As Malcolm laughed, I looked back at the cat. She too had heard, and her whole demeanor seemed to change. She no longer tried to jump or run up the wall, but instead began to lick and fondle the dead kitten as if it were alive. Then she took it in her mouth and began to follow us until we reached the limit of the wall's boundary. I thought I was the only one who noticed, but I was wrong.
Mr. Rivers, I know this may sound silly, but I think that cat means to do you harm.
Oh, now that I love. Oh, let's keep a sense of proportion about this. Oh, I'm terribly sorry about what happened, but I refuse to avoid dark alleys over a damn cat. Besides, she probably has a litter of others under some bush.
Yes, Beth, I think you're being melodramatic.
Do you?
Look, Beth, are you sure you wouldn't rather call it a day?
Oh, for heaven's sake, stop fussing. I said I was all right, didn't I? Or are you trying to get rid of me?
Oh, now, don't start that again.
All I was trying to do was to give Mr. Rivers a perfectly reasonable warning.
I think all are afraid. Well, here's the tower entrance. Shall we go in?
I tried to sound unconcerned, but somewhere in the back of my mind, I had a sneaking feeling that the girl was probably right. At first, we could see nothing. The darkness seemed incarnate, surrounding, stifling us like a blanket. The four of us just stood there, waiting for the use of our eyes to return. We were in the lower chamber. The thin sunlight, filtering in through a tiny window, seemed to lose itself in the thickness of the walls, which were coated with the dust of centuries. Here and there were patches of dark stain. Only Rivers, naturally, remained comparatively unmoved.
Not much room for cameras down here. Still, I suppose we could manage.
Excuse me, but you are English?
Yes. No. Well, three of us are.
I think you English are interested in tortures, yes?
Yes.
You would like to see our collection?
Yes.
The best in Germany.
Thank you very much. Perhaps you could show us around.
You will follow me, please. You are my first party of the day. The main collection is on the floor above. I think you will find them interesting.
I remembered the wealth of stories about the legendary cruelty of the Counts of Sonderberg and, of course, their ladies. It was said that they had found a legitimate outlet for their bloodlust by channeling them into the service of the officers of the Inquisition.
None of your half measures here. Wow! Look at all that!
Oh, Jack!
We found ourselves in a room full of torture instruments. Chairs full of spikes which gave instant and excruciating pain. Steel cages in which the head could slowly be crushed into a pulp. Racks, belts, boots, gloves, collars, and all around the walls great headsmen's swords, evil, keen-edged weapons that would decapitate with one slash, and nearby blocks where the victims' necks had lain, with deep notches where the steel had bitten through the guard of flesh and shored into the wood. We all found ourselves speechless in the face of this bestial evidence of man's inhumanity to man. All that is except
but
Malcolm
this
Rivers.
Is unbelievable! Just what we need! It's too good to be true, it really is. You see, it's perfect for a setup, just here. It's a question of getting permission to use this stuff, but well, I wonder what the formalities are. Hey, let me just sit in that chair a moment. Wow!
Rivers was behaving with his usual insensitivity, but there was something more. I think the others shared the feeling with me that it was sacrilegious. An odd word to use, I know, but there was something sacred about the place. It was a temple. But a temple to evil.
Now, over here, sirs and madam, is a famous instrument of the Inquisition. One might almost say the most famous, and still in perfect working order.
The old man pointed to the main object in this chamber of horrors, the Iron Virgin, a copy of the famous one at Nuremberg. The contraption was covered in rust and dust, except for the face, which was oddly fresh-looking, as if the custodian had scrubbed it. While the figure was curved in the shape of a woman, it was just broad enough for a man to fit inside, as we could see when the door was opened. The door itself was enormously thick and was worked open and shut by a thick chain running through a pulley attached to a heavy beam in the roof. When the weight was released, the door would slam shut. the devilish nature of the Iron Virgin was truly revealed when you examined the inside of the door. A number of iron spikes were fixed there, and when the victim was placed inside it and the door closed, the upper spikes would pierce his eyes and the lower ones his heart and vitals.
What a charming toy.
Oh, God, look at the bloodstains.
It's hard to wash out blood completely, man. And there are some who say this comes back anyway.
I think I can believe this place is haunted.
And on that happy note, I vote that we make a hurried exit.
That suits me.
Well, let's go and have that drink we promised ourselves, shall we? Right now.
No, wait.
What's up this time, for God's sake?
Hey, you, old man. Now, how big is that space?
What, sir?
The space inside. I want to see if I can get in.
Oh,
well, I told you, I like sampling new experiences.
Now, Malcolm, realism is one thing.
Nonsense. Courage of your convictions and all that. Now, come on, Squire. I need your help on this.
Very good, sir, if you insist.
You're not serious.
Well, sure I am. Yeah. That's a tight fit. You've grown some since those days. But I'll manage. Here. See?
You are not really allowed to do this, sir. If anyone found out, I might get into trouble.
Why should anyone find out?
I might even lose my job.
Okay, I get you. Price, give him something, will you?
Oh, well,
I'll settle with you later.
I think this is all very silly.
All in the cause of art.
Well, I, for one, won't go and see his beastly film.
That, my dear, makes two of us.
Hey, what's all the whispering about?
Oh, here you are. 2, 4... 6.
Thank you, sir. Oh, thank you, sir.
Do you think that will square your conscience?
Oh, yes, sir. I think that squares it very nicely.
And now that you've had your little game, can we all go?
Go if you like. I'm not stopping you. I'm staying here.
Oh, come on, Malcolm.
Malcolm,
nothing. I'm really enjoying this. Live dangerously, that's my motto. All right, Charlie, now unfasten the door.
But, sir...
Can't somebody stop
this? Malcolm, you've had your little joke, but enough is enough.
Enough hell. You, Charlie, do as I tell you. Now start letting that door down. But slowly. Very, very slowly.
Despite his reluctance, the old man did as he was told. He worked the machine with a deliberate and excruciating slowness in which the outer edge of the door hadn't moved half 5 inches in as many minutes. The whole ridiculous charade had a kind of macabre thrill about it. It was a scene from Malcolm's horror film, played exclusively for our benefit. And then I saw her. The cat. I don't think the others noticed at first. They were too intent on watching the progress of that door. Even Rivers had ceased to chatter. In the far corner of the chamber, dark, untamable forces were gathering. Her green, baleful eyes shone like danger lamps, and as I peered at her, I could see that their color was heightened by the blood, which still smeared her coat and reddened her mouth, and still, slowly, inexorably, with the precision of an expert, the old man went on working that door. Even then, I wasn't sure what the animal intended to do, or even if she intended to do anything, until suddenly...
The cat! Look out for the cat!
The cat launched herself, not at Malcolm, but at the luckless custodian. Her eyes blazed with ferocity. Her hair bristled till she seemed twice her normal size. Her tail lashed out like a tiger's when the quarry is before it. The cat's claws found one of his eyes, and I actually saw her tear through it and down his cheek, leaving wide bands of red where the blood seemed to spurt from every vein.
Oh, Jack! Oh, God!
Look out! He can't hold it!
With a yell of agony and terror, the man leapt back, dropping the chain which held back the door. It ran like lightning through the pulley block, and the massive door slammed shut. In the instant before the door had closed, I saw Malcolm's face. His eyes stared as if dazed, and for once in his life, he was speechless.
Jack, help me get the door open. For God's sake, help me.
I'm coming. Beth, stay where you are. For God's sake, don't look.
The end must have been quick, for when we managed to wrench the door open, the spikes had done their work. They had pierced right through the skull, so that as the door opened, the body came with it, and he fell to the floor, face turned upwards.
Get your wife out of here. She needs air. I'll attend to the old man.
Right.
The old custodian was leaning against the wooden pillar, holding his reddening handkerchief to his eyes, while on the face of poor Rivers, there sat the cat, purring loudly as she licked the blood which trickled through the gashed sockets of his eyes. I pushed her away from her ghoulish meal, and, well, I hope no one will call me cruel, because I seized one of the old executioner's swords from its rack on the wall, and with one slash, shore her in two on the spot. Poor Malcolm. He'd had his total experience, a good deal more total than he'd bargained for. Cozy, wasn't it? You see what I mean about cats? You never can tell.
That was Vincent Price, bringing you The Price of Fear. Also starring in this story, Cat's Cradle, were Kenneth J. Warren and Frederick Schrecker, with John Sampson and Bonnie Harren. Cat's Cradle was first recounted as The Score by Bram Stoker, dramatized by Richard Davis, and produced by John Dias.
Oh, well, that was pretty creepy. Now, a lot of the stories were adapted. Doing a little bit of research on this story, found out that the original story, of course, like I said, was written by Bram Stoker in the 19th century, all filled with his medieval notions of horror. Now, BBC writer adapted it and turned it into a Cat's Cradle for Vincent Price to do for BBC. Now, to understand this story better, you should read the short story written by, as we said, Bram Stoker, called The Squaw. And even back in those times, it wasn't considered, you know, one of his quote-unquote best stories, but it was still considered worthy. The actual proposed audience of readers for the story were 9 to 12-year-olds, believe it or not, and some even found it humorous. So, what we did was we listened to a more palatable version done by BBC with Vincent Price putting his somewhat comical horror into it at a later time. Now when we listen, we're listening through the ears of people with love of animals and concerned with their cruelty, so it's probably hit a nerve with a few people. Please don't send me hate mail, okay? It's just entertainment and looking at, you know, the arts here and how things moved from the original version to what we popularize. Now, of course, we don't advocate, you know, animal cruelty here on the show, obviously, but the original story, getting into how it began, didn't really play this way. It was much more detailed, and it included an analogy to an Indian squaw by this fellow from the Wild West with poor English diction, and he was the one who killed the kitten. Now, he was a crazy American who thought he was above the law of nature, so that puts an even higher spin on what this actually could be if you wanted to take the story and run with it yourself. Write your own version of adaptation here. BBC placed his character with the producer, deleted all the references to the squaw, took out the detail that better set the entire story. After reading the short Bram Stoker story, it figured better into a medieval horror story than the cat could have been a ghost from the past. Of course, you know, that's just our take on it. And after reading the original story, by the ending, the gruesome and horror of it hits you, you know. I think that the short story is worth a read, and if you take yourselves back to Bram Stoker's writings and times, it might not be so unworthy as we might be thinking. because when you hear that it's going to be cruelty to a cat, even the story mentions no particular sympathy for the American who killed the kitten. In response to kill the cat was after a few minutes of extreme horror, the custodian's eye being ripped out by the cat and the brutal death of the American idiot. The cat sat licking the blood from the gouged eye of the custodian, and the American hung then fell to the floor in absolute visual horror. And the reaction to kill the cat was a wickedness of the cat's revenge and potential evil to others. So kind of, you know, that whole don't mess with Mother Nature and don't mess with a mother kind of theme. Modern reviewers suggest it's worth a read simply for the lesson against cruelty to animals. So check out the original, rethink your thoughts back to those times, realizing that this medieval gore was serious reality for several 100 years or so. You know, that's an entire era of time where, you know, the buffalo were slaughtered, et cetera, et cetera. Now, hopefully this could make a difference in your thoughts, at least to be a little bit more objective about it. Now, the website is www.shortstoryarchive.com, and look up The Squaw on there. It had a completely different impact on me after reading the story than the BBC version, which is what I heard first through Dear Vincent Price. So very, very different take from what something starts out to be and what it ends up being in media or in movie, as many, I'm sure, horror and sci-fi authors could probably tell you. And those of us in the audience that read the books and then we see the movie. So what's worse, see the movie first, then read the book, or read the book and then see the movie and get disappointed, right? Anyway, both are worth a listen and attention, and hopefully you take a look at that. Now, that being said, I would like to promote the Humane Society of the United States, all right? And you can go make a donation and, you know, get your pets spayed and neutered, okay? If you take a look at how many animals are in these shelters, these animals are checked out by vets. They are ready for adoption, ready for a home. Please, please, if you are thinking about getting your family a new addition, check out your local Humane Society and see what they have to offer you. Or you can go online also for donations, and that's www.humanesociety.org. You can find animals near you if you're looking for a particular type. And if you have an animal that you need to seek new home for, you can also contact them. Say you're moving or you just can't take care of your animals anymore. They will be happy to assist you in that area as well. Well, it looks like Savage Science is coming to a close here. I'm going to leave you with a little bit of a music outro tonight, and I'd like to thank Nick Palucco for the great show graphics. I'd like to thank Dennis Bond and Hawk Productions for that fantastic intro I use every single week. Ooh, how creepy. And I'd like to thank Waleed Al-Haddad, who helps me find these fantastic thought-provoking articles and presentations to stimulate your neurons, and my executive producer, Magic Man Todd Sheets, the man behind the show and the technical aspect of it. So, until we meet again, happy trails, and keep your powder and your pants dry.
an icy sky, and I heard bells ringing. I think I heard an angel sigh.